we have an item on the calendar to proceed with at 2 o'clock, and that's number 572. Could you read that, please?
Establish a program to provide incentives, training, and technical assistance to promote voluntary deconstruction as a viable alternative to mechanical demolition.
Thank you. So this is another piece of the council's examination and at some levels re-examination of how we deal with development. We've recently dealt with demolition delay and notice. We've done updated hazmat certification rules, which BDS staff will be present here today to talk about, answer questions about. We're about to begin work on a single-family code update to address issues of scale and size and fit, thank you, of infill development in neighborhoods. But deconstruction is the focus today about how we do demolition in those hopefully rare instances where it's justified, do it in a way that perhaps creates more jobs than simply demolishing the house or structure, improves safety for workers and neighbors, reduces waste, avoids carbon, just dumping carbon. The industry, of course, exists, and we have some folks here from the industry that deal with deconstruction. But even despite that innovation, we still see most houses being outright demolished rather than demolition and salvage. So I'm really excited about this discussion. I'm excited about the work that's been done. We've got a team here from the Bureau to kick us off, and then some folks from the community as well. So Michael and Sean, thank you for being here this afternoon, and we've got a presentation for us. Take it away.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Michael Armstrong with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'll provide just some brief context for this, and then Sean will describe the proposal in front of you today. As you noted, Mayor, today's resolution addresses deconstruction specifically, and we are mindful that this is one piece of this, you know, fairly complex constellation of issues that are about to appear on the screen here, related to demolitions, touches affordability, touches, you know, the issues around delay that Council took up back in February, touches on neighborhood character and compatibility. What we want to talk about today is deconstruction. So when houses do need to come down, we want to do that in ways that provide the best benefits to the community. And deconstruction really can be a great example of a triple bottom line approach where it's better for jobs. You know, we get 6 jobs from deconstruction for every job that's created in a demolition project. It's better for neighborhood safety and health. You know, you take something down carefully, you get less dust, you can deal with any solvents or other things that you uncover along the way. Certainly better for carbon emissions, avoids the need to produce all these virgin raw materials, and reduces waste as well. And then, of course, it's producing a valuable building product. It's often high quality, and it's often affordable. So there are really a whole host of benefits that deconstruction provides to the community. In February of this year, Council took action around the delay and notification provisions around house demolitions. And at that time, Mayor, you had asked us to work together with stakeholders to bring a proposal back that would provide incentives and otherwise address deconstruction. And so that's what we have back for you today. This resolution would establish a voluntary incentive-based deconstruction program. We've identified funding in the Solid Waste Management Fund that we will come back as part of the fall bump to try to secure. And meanwhile, we'll go ahead and get this program set up and be ready for the funding. And then this is intended as a pilot. So we'll be working closely with the community, both the deconstruction service providers, contractors, community members, so that in September of 2016, we'll be able to come back and report on what we've learned, how it's going, and recommendations for options at that time. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sean, and he'll describe the details of the proposal and just a little more background on deconstruction.
Great. Thanks, Michael. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Sean Wood. I'm the Construction Waste Specialist for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And I want to interrupt the flow of things just a little bit and talk about some terminology so we can all be on the same page today. So when it comes to building removal, there's a couple of different options. One is demolition. And this is one of the concerns in the neighborhoods. These houses come down usually through mechanical means. using a large excavator, and the building is torn down, and the materials are sent to a recovery facility where they're sorted for recycling. A lot of the wood gets burned for energy recovery, and that's called hog fuel. I don't know if we'll hear that term today, but I'll throw it out there. And then a lot of the material ends up in the landfill, so despite efforts to harvest some of that material for recycling, it does end up in the landfill often. And then an alternative to mechanized demolition is deconstruction. So this is where a building is disassembled, typically by hand. In the reverse order, it was constructed in order to salvage materials for reuse. So a difference between reuse and recycling. Reuse is repurposing salvaged building materials, so using things like wood flooring or sinks for their intended purpose, and not necessarily crushing those up and creating a new material or a new product, which is recycling. And then again, when we talk about wood recycling, we're really talking about burning that for fuel or energy recovery. We established a deconstruction advisory group back in April and met a total of 5 times and got really good information from a group of interests ranging from the salvage industry, so both for and nonprofit deconstruction experts, historic preservation. We had building builders, contractors, and recyclers, as well as representatives from the United Neighborhoods for Reform, or UNR. We also had membership from the Development Review Advisory Committee, or DRAC, and then also staff from BDS and Metro. And I'd like to personally thank those members that came to the meetings and contributed a lot of their expertise and their commitment to the issue, and then also members of the public who also attended. Using their information and expertise, BPS, like Michael said, is proposing a phased approach, so starting with a voluntary incentive program and then looking at next steps for requirements for minimum salvage. The deconstruction incentive pilot would include training. So currently, BPS is working with our procurements staff to develop a deconstruction training, a 2-day training that we'll hold in September for the prime contractor development program. So we could potentially use that as a model going forward with training during the pilot program. We'll also provide technical assistance, so going out, meeting with folks on job sites, answering phone calls, meeting with firms. And then I think an important aspect of this is the program and project promotion. So how do we leverage a small project and get as much media attention out of that? What can we do with our own website and our own tools to get that information out into the public and promote deconstruction? And then financial incentives, again, would come from the Solid Waste Management Fund. I've identified $50,000 that we could use and distribute on a grant-based process. So that would include a selection committee based on industry experts and neighborhood representation, and we could distribute that using a set of criteria that could include innovation, and ways of reducing the time it takes to deconstruct or reduce the cost of deconstruction or innovative methods to achieve those. And, you know, the program would do promotion, but also what's the story on the actual projects and what can they do to promote deconstruction in their project. We can also look at criteria around the advancement of equity and how is a project how is the project contributing to the community? And then commitment to training. So our projects going to kick off an existing deconstruction firm and taking things a little bit farther and using the training as a way to achieve that. And then, of course, reporting back to council in September of 2016 with additional steps, recommendations, and report on how the program is going. And then in terms of schedule, what we're recommending is kicking off the pilot in fall of 2015, so fall this year, and then reporting back to council in September, so roughly a year of operating the pilot. And then when we discuss next steps, if those include some sort of minimum salvage requirements, staff would go and work with the community and continued work with the deconstruction advisory group to implement those changes, and then begin, launch that phase two in summer of 2017. And then staff envisions the deconstruction advisory group continuing to meet between now and the future, so to continue that good work. There's a lot of compelling reasons to be more aggressive with deconstruction. You'll hear about some of those today, but BPS really feels that a phased approach will be the best way to go. Benefits of the pilot help inform us of what those next steps are. We can figure out how to measure salvage materials. Do we do that by weight or volume or use a deconstruction calculator? We can also better understand the issues related with compliance and making sure things actually happen in the field. And we can reward and learn from innovative projects. It also gives us time to develop and conduct training and education to get the rest of the industry up to speed, and hopefully the time to build capacity within the salvage industry, and allow time for the building and demolition industry to adapt as we look towards future steps.
When you say learn from innovative projects, I'm curious, don't we have a pretty good knowledge base about how large-scale deconstruction projects have worked in Portland? And I'm thinking, for example, when Home Forward did the redevelopment of Columbia Villa, the new Columbia. My understanding is that they decided to go the deconstruction route, and so there was a big effort to deconstruct those older homes. And presumably from that they learned about, what works, what doesn't, was it cost-effective, and the like. So when we say reward and learn from innovative projects, are we also looking backward at the experience of other agencies and partners in doing deconstruction, or are you looking prospective in terms of what we learn under the pilot?
Yeah, so there is a large base of knowledge out there, and we've got folks here in the audience today that do this for a living, and they certainly have a lot of knowledge. There's opportunities using the expertise of the deconstruction industry and potentially coupling that with the demolition industry. So, for example, in Seattle, hybrid deconstruction is probably the most typical method for pulling down a building, and that's where they leverage the power and speed of a piece of equipment, the excavator, to lower walls and get those down on the ground where the workers can work on them more safely and efficiently. So something like that is an example of rewarding innovation and learning from that. So it's going to increase the speed at which they take down a building and potentially lower costs.
Okay, anything else?
I believe that is it.
Okay, questions? For Sean or Michael. Thank you both. And we have some invited testimony. I want to call up Joe Connell from Habitat Restore and Mary Helen Kincaid from the DRAC, Alondo Simpson from City of Roses Disposal and Recycling. And then we have a couple more, but let's take those three first. And welcome. Thanks for your involvement in this. Who'd like to start?
I guess I'm supposed to go first. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. It's great to be working on this project with you all. My name is Joe Connell. I am with Habitat for Humanity. I'm Vice President of Retail Operations for us, and that means I oversee all three of our restores and our deconstruction program. I'm pretty sure you're all familiar with Habitat and what we do and kind of how we do it, so I won't backtrack on that. But what I would like to point out, which is unique for us and unique in this setting we're in, is that we're a mortgage lender, a developer, a builder, a deconstruction contractor, a reuse retailer, and a neighborhood advocate. So we play a pretty unique role within this city, I believe, and I think our concerns touch a lot of the broad scope of concerns in this topic, all the way across the boards. So Then I want to point out a little bit of what reuse and some of our deconstruction work has done for us and done for the community through us over the last year. Our program this year has exceeded $3 million in sales and income. We have raised over $1 million in cash for Habitat home building here in the Portland metro area in one year. We have diverted 10 to 12 million pounds of materials from the landfill or recycling. We've created 30 jobs, and we have 59,000 workforce readiness or volunteer hours in our stores this year. I point these out because this was all made possible by reuse materials. None of this would exist as part of our program without the diversion of materials that were either going to be thrown away or wasted. So that's a tremendous impact in our mind on the community from these types of materials that we're talking about. So we support this resolution because we know we can do more. We're just touching the tip of the iceberg here with what we do. We know that. We see projects slip through our fingers all the time, and we know we can do more. And we know the need is great. There's a lot more that we could do to build our programs. There's a lot of waste we could divert. There's a lot of homes we can build. So there's a lot of pieces here that can fit together for us. We do believe that this program would open doors for us and others in our industry and help build a broader industry that will make deconstruction more affordable and make it a more vital part of our local building industry. I think to date, we've been very separate. And I think I would love to see this program because it would help build together bridges between our building industry and our deconstruction and reuse industry. And I think we can do a lot more together. We also believe that we need to find a balanced way to work together to promote further reuse and deconstruction while meeting as many of our mutual goals as possible and removing the barriers along the way. This is why we support the voluntary incentive-based approach outlined here, so that we can together learn how to move into a more fuller and more productive use of our resources throughout the city. Also, while I'm here, I want to thank the BPS team. They've been great to work with. Sean's been great to work with this over these last 5 weeks. I don't know about you guys, but I'm really proud of our city and that they have this department and that they do the work they do. So thanks for leading that.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mary Helen, welcome.
Hi. For the record, Mary Helen Kincaid, the chair of the Development Review Advisory Committee. Our official representative, Kristen Wells, attended the first couple meetings and then got employed by the city and couldn't fulfill the rest of it, so I got stuck in the chair today. I usually operate from the standpoint of tell me the things I don't know so that you don't keep hearing the same things, but I just want to really emphasize the point that this proposal is a result of about 16 months ago when DRAC started their attention in March of demolitions. And we were focusing on life and safety, but when we went out to the community, to all the meetings we went to, we heard about hazmat control and we heard about concerns about deconstruction and landfill. And so Jeff Fish, who was the then chair, encouraged that a separate committee be addressed so that it was carefully analyzed and better incentives were found that we were able to do a proposal. So we were really excited that this committee was formed and worked in a very expedient fashion. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that two major accomplishments have happened in this area in 16 months, and I'm hard-pressed to say that I don't think that much has been accomplished in a lot of areas. So I'm very proud of BDS and BPS and the citizens involved that we're able to bring these forward to protect citizens and also bring alternatives to the table about what happens when a demolition happens. The one thing that I keep saying repeatedly is that deconstruction is a form of demolition, and there's not a person in the room that doesn't think that deconstruction is not a good thing. But sometimes people get that confused that a house is being deconstructed, and somehow that doesn't register with them. And then the site development and excavation has to come in and take the basement out in those cases. There's some considerations there, and when we do public outreach, that'll be one thing that I think we need to clarify for people so that we don't get them angry again that they think we're saving the house by deconstructing it and building it somewhere else, or in some cases that does happen. I think this is a great opportunity to connect, as Joe mentioned, the deconstructors, the building industry. Jeff's not here to defend himself, but he was one of the first to say he had no idea what was involved in deconstruction, and it had always been too expensive, and he didn't know. So they worked with Lovett Construction, and I don't know where that went, but they had a sample house, and they went out and did bids and back and forth. So I think it's a great opportunity to connect those people and find a ground for them to work on to make this fair and equitable for everybody. The issues that came up with the demolition issue and was deconstruction, the hazmat handling, and the infill and design. And you're addressing all of those. So I wanted to give you credit that those things are moving forward and citizens are participating. I think that a lot of great people worked on these and in a short period of time, so it proves that we can do good things. I think you'll hear testimony today for mandatory deconstruction and penalties, and I just don't think that a negative reaction to this is going to work. I think a positive approach of incentivizing people that are doing good work, sharing that good knowledge, helping other people who don't understand how the process works, doing training. It doesn't help in a, and you all know this, but I've got to say it out loud, it doesn't help in a collaborative effort to villainize any of those stakeholders and say one person is the cause, the root of all evil. Everybody is involved in this process, and we need to make it work for everybody in some fashion. And demolition, again, was that issue. Nobody was happy, and in the end, I think that was a success. Everybody had to collaborate and give in a little on what was uncomfortable to them, and I think that same thing will happen here. Several builders that came to the meetings and participated in these meetings even said they didn't care where the incentives went. They just wanted this to be a fair and equitable program that would work for everybody. In the end, the property owner is the one who will really benefit from the incentives because they'll be able to do something that feels good to them and that's not going to cost them an extra $3,000, $4,000 on top of what the costs already are. It might not be the best analogy, but it was the best one that I could come up with was curbside recycling and how that was handled. We didn't go out and penalize people and carry a big stick and say, you must use those. Many of my neighbors complained, and I was one of the people that went around with the flyers early on and said, here's what you get to do, and I got yelled at about the roll carts, and I got yelled at about every 2 weeks this is infrequent as they could get their garbage, and the things were stinky, and they had rats, and I live in a wetlands area, and all of those things. Don't hear a peep. Everybody likes it now. I mean, it's almost a community event. I mean, you know, well, they get to roll our roll carts out, we get to help our neighbors. So it just took a while for people to get used to what it was, something new. And change is hard for all of us. I use that example because people just get in a pattern and they have things, and now you've added roll carts and things. So I think that same thing is going to happen here on a grander scale. I think we need to continue the positive approaches that this proposal brought forward. Reward those people, whoever they are, that are doing good things. Sean mentioned, you know, incentives for best practices. I think there's a lot out there. I've learned a lot. And I think that the committee as a whole agreed that this is a good way to teach people how to do good things. Joe had a classic quote that I really like, and we should somehow fashion this in a marketing thing. He says, I want everyone to feel the love of deconstruction. And I think if we can get to that point with a phased-in approach, we're going to create the jobs. We're going to save precious resources. People will learn what's being recycled, and maybe they're going to want to start using those. They will all attest to the fact that there's a huge market that's developed over the years. So I think this is a great start to things. I think that the building community is on board. They're just concerned about it being fair and equitable and not be put in a villainized situation where I can't speak for them. We probably got a letter from the HBA. But the incentive program should be so that the process works better, not just reward those people who you believe should be rewarded. So I think that's good. I want to echo Joe's comments on the good work by the BPS staff, and I think someone from DRAC will continue on this committee and follow it. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Londo, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hells and members of the council. For the record, Orlando Simpson, business owner, City of Roses Disposal and Recycling, and our DBA division, Core Recycling, which is a material recovery facility that sees a lot of demolition debris as well as new construction debris. So I have a wealth of knowledge in our time being involved with discarded materials and in managing construction debris. But in regards to why we're here today, I'm here today to support the resolution on behalf of the deconstruction program that would foster the necessary innovative growth in the construction industry, and most importantly, create more green-collar jobs for our local economy. Remember, you heard it here. As a rapidly growing city, our sustainable reputation, leadership, and strategies have fostered a substantial amount of this growth. Growth that would have not been made possible had our philosophies not been instilled into the fabric of what makes Portland, Portland today. For the various regulations, policies, principles that have become the guardian of our economy, our environment, and most importantly, the people that live here, these new innovative opportunities that exist now would not be so prevalent today. As someone who lives and breathes in the world of discarded materials, as I had mentioned earlier, being a owner of a locally recycling company, it is extremely important that the City of Portland take a stance and make a conscious decision about how we as a region plan to responsibly manage construction and demolition debris now as well as in the future. I have made a mindful decision of my own to venture into the construction industry specifically in order to provide these very deconstruction services, which will enable my firm to become more diverse and a first of its kind. I have taken many early steps in preparation for this endeavor, such as investing in more real estate in order to stockpile salvage materials, which do have in-use market value, and most notably, being selected to participate in the city's prime contractor development program. And now I sit here before you today to encourage an incentive-based approach for deconstruction practices, because it not only assists small businesses such as mine to enter the marketplace, but it further builds upon the city's sustainability goals and aspirations. The drastic demand for residential living units here in the metro area and fostering the many construction cranes that currently stand is just a small metaphor of the growing demand around salvaged materials. We must be logical and strategic that when the demand is there and the supply does not support it, we as an ecosystem must collectively build that infrastructure. That infrastructure that is necessary to grow that supply. The window of opportunity is wide open right now, and I highly encourage your support, therefore we can see the continued reuse and salvage markets' innovative growth in the domestic and international marketplace. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for these panelists? Thank you very much. Sorry we've taken that great volunteer Larry O'Day out of Habitat for a few weekends, but he'll be back. He's having knee surgery. Larry volunteers for our police chief volunteers for Habitat almost every Saturday, so he's temporarily out of action. Have his nail belt back on soon enough. Let's see. I think we have a couple more folks that we invited. Barbara Kerr and Shane Endicott, are they here? Yes, Shane. Come on up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
All right. I know you want to be the tail end.
Okay.
Yeah.
So give him that privilege, Barbara?
There's more power. I'll give him that privilege, yes. I respect him well. Okay, so my name is Barbara Kerr, and I represent the United Neighborhoods for Reform, and I am their representative on the Deconstruction Advisory Group. And as you all know and have stated so eloquently in the opening to this meeting, which I was so glad to hear, the list of benefits to deconstruction versus mechanical demolition is very long. Meeting climate action plan, affordable housing, economic development, and most urgently reduces the public's involuntary exposure to hazardous materials. Thank you for including that. When UNR met with the Portland's neighborhoods, 43 formally signed on to our resolution, but in none of those meetings was deconstruction ever controversial. If a house must be removed and cannot be recited, as you also included, that was great, the public feels deconstruction is a given. The UNR appreciates the city moving forward on making deconstruction the way Portland demolishes, buildings. We would gladly support the resolution if it were amended to, one, direct all public funds for a deconstruction program to go to training, education, and certification for deconstructionists, including the existing industry, and not incentivize contractors and developers, and that these efforts maintain the standards set by the existing deconstruction industry. They are our leaders. To shorten the time before deconstruction is required by taking immediate actions to train, inform, and educate to support voluntary deconstruction as soon as possible, and set an endpoint, a measurable goal, in terms of full deconstruction. Plus, in order to meet that goal, setting a date for when the DAG committee will determine if a given amount of progress in full or partial deconstruction has been made, which, if not reached, will require making deconstruction mandatory. We want to see it happen voluntarily with support. We don't want to have to make it mandatory, but if it's not happening fast enough, that would be the next tool. We recommend that if the proposal cannot be amended as such today, that it be sent back to the DAG committee. In the DAG meetings, we discussed the following concerns related to these requested amendments. Relating to our first amendment, incentivizing developers was an issue. We feel paying developers to deconstruct or paying deconstruction companies to help lower their bids creates two major problems. One, it misleads the building industry and public into thinking that deconstruction is not a viable business model, a premise that deconstruction industry in Portland has been disproving for the last 18 years. Two, it further incentivizes demolition of our affordable homes, our homes of character that make up most of our desirable neighborhoods and our historic homes. If you pay people to demolish, we're going to have more demolitions. Relating to the Second Amendment, the concerns about shortening time were we needed to allow time for developers to transition. But it's not like plastic bags and styrofoam containers. There's no inventory to use up. There are professionals ready, willing, and able to bid new jobs immediately. And I have to say, I started selling used building materials when we founded Rejuvenation in 1977. That's 38 years ago. The public response was hugely enthusiastic from day one. We, including the building industry, have had decades to see that deconstruction is where we are going, where we have to go. There has been plenty of time to transition, and some have done so very successfully, but certainly not enough. Another concern was the increased cost to the developers, but it's been shown that the difference in cost, depending on the building being taken down, is in the $5,000 to $7,000 range on average. We're talking homes. A small amount compared to what is being paid to buy a house just to tear it down. Developers would have to pay for the abatement of materials that deconstruction will expose. But first, abatement costs have greatly decreased over time. And second, they are going to have to abate as we move toward Senate Bill 705 and further increase control of hazardous materials exposure. As stated in the DAG meetings, 80% of the time a house goes through initial abatement before deconstruction, they have to be called back because they found more hazardous materials in the building when they started to take it apart. Those materials are not found if a developer does do the initial abatement before crunching the house, and so they go up in the smoke. The abatement companies just do sampling. You have to take the house apart. You have to open the walls to expose all the possible hazardous materials. As we move toward not allowing hazardous materials to be released into the air, mechanical demolition, except for the concrete foundations, is not going to be feasible. It will have to be done by deconstruction, and the city is doing the building industry a favor by supporting them to quickly make the transition to deconstruction. Question came up, can the market handle the influx of materials? I heard in the DAG meetings that deconstructionists said yes. Shane will tell you the Rebuilding Center sells 700 to 1,000 doors a month. There's a market. There's a huge market. And that's just locally. Besides condition, volume determines the price of used materials. Therefore, if there are more materials on the market, the prices will be lower. The lower prices fuel an even larger market. The deconstructionist, there was a question if the deconstructionist could respond to the increased workload. I heard yes, they can. It may not be easy, but these guys are our pioneers. They want to see it happen. They will put their heads out there and their necks out there. Plus, there are also organizations already in the business of training deconstruction laborers and companies. Deconstruction warehouses and yards are not like building a new office building or putting in lots of technical computer facilities, right? Space can be rented. And existing companies would come from out of state. Existing businesses such as abatement companies and mechanical demolition companies would expand into deconstruction, and small businesses would spawn. As a personal note, this is what I love about the whole thing the most, is because back when deconstructionists were called hand wreckers, those hand wreckers were people who didn't have the education, didn't have the training, just had the care and the work ethic to get a beat up old truck and go out and start taking buildings apart down to the ground, and saved everything. Another issue is time for the city to develop standards and training. But the industry has been around this town for 18 years. There are people nationally and internationally doing it. You could adapt and adopt what they already have in place. They've been using their standards that long. And BPS is already planning a training for the prime contractors list in September. With a grant from Metro, they could expand it to more individuals and companies wanting to be trained and certified. Earth Advantage has an accredited training already, and the local deconstructionists would be available to inform their process. The city could help sponsor information events for builders and developers to gain access to the deconstruction industry, from deconstructionists to reuse sales. There's a lot that can be done with nonprofits even in promoting deconstruction and educating the industry, the traditional building industry. There was also concern about the city being able to enforce deconstruction regulations. Yes, that can be a nightmare, but not if we make it simple. If the criteria is full deconstruction or partial on the way there, the definitions are pretty simple. As I understand it, full is complete removal to the foundation, and partial is removal down to the studs and joists. This has been discussed in the DAG committee. It's easy for both the city to enforce that and also for the neighbors to be watchdogs. The neighbors will watch, and they can tell the difference between not completely deconstructing and completely deconstructing if it's that simple. Deconstruction also greatly reduces the need for the city or any agency to enforce public safety laws for hazardous materials. It's difficult for deconstructionists to avoid following the rules in terms of safety, even if they wanted to. For one, they have more workers out there, and two, the extra time allows for more time to get caught. So enforcement of hazmat regulations will be easier and more thorough, relieving the city of a major issue to address. We need leadership. We don't need transition or more debate. We need leadership. We need the council to announce that Portland is committed to deconstruction because of all it does for the city. Then set the goal now. Let the building industry know that what the city is going to require and why. Give them a head start. If we are beginning the training in the next few months and stating the commitment to deconstruction now, the transitioning can move forward and give DAG a head start on working out the needs that arise. Two, follow through on getting the facts rather than debating. The deconstructionist industry locally, nationally, and internationally has history and studies. As you were saying, Mr. Fish, when Portland moves to deconstruction rather than mechanical demolition, we will attract national and international interest and help. We are not alone and do not need to start from scratch. Three, order an economic study done by an economist to describe the costs and triple bottom line benefits for the city. This could take a year for the study to be done, but it will also serve as an assessment of the success during that year to report back to the public. The timeline that UNR would find accessible is public education starting with immediate announcement that the city is committed to deconstruction and why, and publicizing efforts such as the training. September 2015, this fall, training for laborers and contractors leading to certification. Right now, Sean has planned for the prime contractors training to be a model. I think we can take that money and expand it to do simultaneous. Okay, so then by March 2016, have DAG review the progress of voluntary constructions. If we're not on track to meet the end goal, full deconstruction becomes mandatory as of September 2016. We need leadership, and we need it now. With an average of a demolition a day, we can't wait any longer. We have known for decades that it is what we need to do. UNR does not want to see this proposal go back to the DAG without a strong and responsible resolution. We are asking you to amend it to require the use of funds only for training and education, maintain the high level of standards of the existing deconstruction industry, and take immediate action in starting the transition with a set, measurable, and short timeline for the goal of deconstruction being the way Portland does demolition if a building must be removed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks. Shane, you get the back cleanup.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to share, and thanks for the opportunity to participate on the Deconstruction Advisory Group. I think that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability did an excellent job and brought a really diverse group of people together. Personally, I have over 40 years of deconstruction experience and reuse, and 20 of those, I guess, would be deemed professionally. I'm the executive director of Our United Villages, local nonprofit. I'm a co-founder of the organization, as well as the Rebuilding Center, which is one of our biggest projects we launched in 1998. And as I think has been said, we divert a lot of building materials, on average 8 tons a day, and we have approximately 300 people on average come through a day reusing it. And we really are just scratching the surface. I'm just mostly want to restate that I support a lot of what's already been shared through the other testimony as far as the facts and pointing out the benefits of deconstruction and what it would have for our city. I get to see it on a daily basis just from, again, it seems like we're moving a lot. We're just barely scratching the surface. But just today, we have a group of youth in our shop that are making book kiosks that are free for the neighborhoods. You've probably seen them around, but we've had a number of times youth come through with group leaders, and they build these out of all free reclaimed materials. We also have volunteers coming through. We have over 2,000 volunteers coming through a year, representative of every demographic in our community, age, socioeconomic, people going through all kinds of different changes. People just want to make a positive difference. And they come in and use those materials as a vehicle for improving the social fabric, strengthening the social fabric of our city. And it wouldn't be an opportunity without it. It's incredible work all over. We've been able to donate materials on a regular basis to all kinds of groups and individuals who are doing things for free, everything from Girl Scouts to group youth right now working with the Village Building Convergence and free housing in our city. I should say it's transitional housing, but we've been able to donate free materials to those efforts as well. And I guess I would just share that one important role we'll serve in the city for helping this be successful is that we've always had a policy since we started that we share all of our knowledge and experience for free with anyone, any entity, for-profit or nonprofit, that wants to do this work. They are invited into our organization, and they shadow our employees, they shadow our staff, they shadow our operations. The only thing I can't give them access to is the personnel files because it's a legal issue. But otherwise, everything else, we don't have any secrets. It's come in, learn how we do this, and export it back to wherever you're going to do these projects, whether they're across the street from our facility or they're across the country. And to restate, the interest in this is international. We have people coming from all over the world. In fact, the last 2 days we've had German television and radio network, which is the largest viewed public network in Germany, videotaping our facility and going on our job sites, our deconstruction site, and looking at it as a model. And we've had many other countries come and folks invite us from all over to come and start these in their communities across the country as well as in other countries. And our feedback always is we don't do that. What we do is we share what we have for free and come to us and hang out and take whatever you find is useful. So I just want to restate that we think that we, from our experience, hands-on experience, we see this bring a tremendous value to the citizens or the residents of Portland as well as the city as a whole. And that those networks that are coming here from all over are really looking at our ethos of sustainability. And our organization is committed, as much as we are, to the environment and sustainability and economy, really the social fabric of what makes up our society and reaching our full potential as a community. So just wanted to share that we think it's a great idea. We think it's a great direction, obviously. And thank you.
Thank you. I should have probably asked Alana this question, too, but Barbara raised it, and that is there was this concern or debate within the advisory group about capacity of the industry to ramp up. So regardless of whether it's a hugely successful incentive program or a move more quick or rapid move to mandatory deconstruction, what do you think about that capacity issue? What does that curve look like for you and others in the industry about what, assuming we're moving this direction from less than 10% of houses that are being demolished being deconstructed to 20, 30, 50, eventually 100, what are the difficulties, if any?
I'll liken it to, I used this example the other day. If you've ever flown on a 747, they don't have to take 20 or 30 minutes to reach your altitude. You can get there much faster. It's not as comfortable. Your ears will pop, but you can do it. I've been in a country where they do that. They get altitude much quicker. What would happen is that you would have the industry and people who want to get into the industry moving much faster if the mandate was sooner. That's how it would look. And it would be organizations like ours would go through some growing pains to bring on that kind of staffing. We've doubled our staff before in a short period of time. The other way is just a slower inclined to getting there. So that's really how it would work. When we went from four deconstructionists when we launched our full-time year-round deconstruction program in 1999. We ended up getting a lot of recognition on a huge project. We did a city block of homes for the Multnomah Athletic Club. And we had to go from a handful of employees in that department, just the deconstruction department, to over 33 in a very short time. It was, as an organization, that kind of growth, we felt it. But at the same time, the benefit was we went from doing a handful of projects to doing 150 to 200 projects a year. Not all full dismantles, because it doesn't have to just be a whole building. It can also be removing reusables. So it's a long answer, but I think the accurate answer is that you'll see an industry get there either way.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Other questions for Barbara Shane? Thank you both. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And so I don't believe we have any other invited testimony, but people are signed up to speak. So if we could call them, please.
We have six people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Margaret Davis, Terry Parker, and Sarah Long.
You have a PowerPoint there, Margaret?
Just have a picture to show you. I'm trying to get into it. Do you know how to get into it?
Carla will help you get that loaded.
Carla can help you.
Carla, I just didn't see the footer. Oh, all right. This guy now. This guy. Okay. Great. Thank you for this opportunity to be here today. I'm Margaret Davis. I work with United Neighborhoods for Reform, and also I'm on the boards of the Rose City Park and Beaumont-Wilshire Neighborhood Associations. Take a look at this picture. This was taken Friday, and it shows a demolition at 3558 Northeast 44th Avenue, two doors away from me. If you live nearby, your home, any place, structure, or barbecue in your yard, and your vegetable gardens would be covered in the dust emanating from this demolition. It was a breezy day, so I could clearly see these clouds of dust billowing across the block. Federal studies have shown that this dust travels up to 400 feet. The house was under 600 square feet, but the dust kept coming all day long and even continued this week. What was in that dust? Nobody knows. We do know that it is nearly certain that any home built before 1978, as this home was full of lead paint. Every can of lead paint had 15 pounds of lead in it. Asbestos also could have been part of the toxic clouds, but again, we don't know what was in those clouds of dust. Based on public health concerns, this council recently banned smoking in city parks. The health effects of lead and asbestos also are well known, and the Centers of Disease Control for Disease Control has said that there is no amount of lead that is safe in children. I saw the dust from this demolition coat the swing set my neighbors keep for her granddaughters. If public health is as important to this council as you say it is, then I urge you to tackle the uncontrolled release of lead and asbestos with as much seriousness as you did the smoking hazard in city parks. The toxic drift launched by mechanical demolition can be avoided through deconstruction. The careful dismantling of homes, coordinated with certified abatement activities, helps contain these hazardous materials and sends them to the appropriate facilities. It does carry a small additional cost, but safeguarding our air and earth are worth it. We are worth it. I understand the council doesn't want to touch the toxic issue of hazardous waste, hazardous materials control and enforcement, but Portland needs to address it as it enters its third record-breaking year for home demolitions. The voluntary measures recently instituted by BDS clearly will not protect Portlanders from exposure to lead and asbestos. Developers will pursue business as usual with wasteful mechanical demolition that sends lead and asbestos into our air, bodies, and lungs. You don't have to directly touch hazmat control to fix this problem. You can make deconstruction the safe, sustainable solution. As our elected leaders, you have the opportunity, even the responsibility, to prioritize public health and safety over the profits of a small group of players. If deconstruction was made mandatory in a timely manner, as opposed to the voluntary program proposed in the document today, and if the costs of deconstruction were assumed by those profiting from the demolition instead of public monies, UNOR could readily support the proposal at hand. The Deconstruction Advisory Group has done fine work, and it would be a shame if its efforts were made moot by tenuous timelines, voluntary status, and payouts to developers to do the right thing. Make deconstruction mandatory and fast-track its implementation. And in so doing, you will put a stop to the toxic clouds that no one should have to ingest. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Terry, welcome.
Thank you. Terry Parker, UNR Steering Committee. I live in Northeast Portland. When a home is to be torn down, it must be done with respect, responsibility, and a high level of sustainability. On December 17th of last year, I testified before you stating that Portland is in the rears when it comes to managing home demolitions, and that private property becomes a public problem when 75% or more of a single-family home is sent to the landfill, and when dust and potentially hazardous materials are spread to and trespass on neighboring properties. Kudos in that a conversation is now taking place within the Deconstruction Advisory Committee. However, the actual pace of progress is moving way too slow. How many more single-family homes will continue to be torn down using an excavator? How much more dust, dirt, and hazardous materials will be sprued into residential neighborhoods and into the lungs of children at play? The estimate on track is that over 400 vintage single-family homes will be torn down this year, most of those teardowns by mechanical demolition, clawing at, ripping apart, and crunching up what was once somebody's family home. The resolution timetable can be likened to a local milk run just drifting down on a bumpy branch line railroad when the need and the public demand is for high-speed rail. To pick up the pace on the route towards better air quality and deconstruction becoming the norm, any financial incentives in the form of taxpayer dollars must be directed towards growing the deconstruction industry through training, education, and certification. The money should not be going to developers to subsidize the eco-friendly teardown option. Accompanying any taxpayer funding must be an accelerated timetable towards a policy change due date that includes regular progress reports along the way to you, the City Council. At the end of the line, the goal must be that with deconstruction, a significant percentage of materials from any home teardowns are preserved for the reusable market. Ultimately, when the train pulls into the station and the people arrive at their green-inspired designation, deconstruction and the reuse of building materials becomes the standard in Portland if and when a single-family home is torn down. And finally, the city already has a hammer it can use to start pulling nails, even those stubborn nails. Make deconstruction mandatory as a component of the Climate Change Action Plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, City Commissioners. It is an honor to be able to speak with you today. My name is Sarah Long, and I am here today to speak on behalf of the over half of all Portlanders, even approaching 60% of all Portlanders at this point, who are renters. And as we all know, the percentage of people like me in Portland will only increase over time. Tenants, while constituting a majority of the city's residents, are underrepresented when it comes to creating policy and are underrepresented when it comes to you, our elected officials, being able to hear feedback about how those policies are impacting their real lives. Fewer renters can make it to community meetings. Fewer renters are able to embark upon the steep learning curve to understand that thing that no one human being can completely understand, the land use rules. I have at this point begun correcting the facts given to me by Killian Condon. If you don't know who Killian Condon is, that's indicative of how deeply troubling this all is. Killian Condon is our only, as in just one guy, DEQ inspector in this entire portion of the state. And he has it easy. He only covers these northwest counties. The other guy covers more than three quarters of the state. And I have yet to convince him to come inspect a site where I've photographed asbestos fibers blowing around in the breeze. I have more stuff in here about being a renter, but I'm just going to skip that. And I want to just go back to what Barbara said. Everything she said was so wonderful, and she is truly one of the pioneers in the city in reuse. She founded rejuvenation. I mean, wow. So, you know, I just want to revert back to what she said and say we really need appropriate, you know, we need for that $50,000 that should will be followed by other monies. We need it to go to education and training. It should go to Earth Advantage, we think. They already have the training program in place. We would like to see a better timeline. And we would like to see, as she said, if with strong encouragement and use of the bully pulpit from the elected officials saying, hey guys, this is Portland. Get on acting like being Portland, okay? Let's reuse and reduce and actually recycle. So, yeah, I would like to say just I'd like to support her plan, the one that she already suggested to you, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you all. Okay, next.
Preston Browning, Robert Bernstein, and Brandon Spencer Hartle.
Robert, go ahead. You're there on first, so you can start first.
Thanks. I'm Robert Bernstein. I live up on Mount Tabor, lived southeast Portland 46 years since 1969. And so I was back there, and I'm thinking, well, I came here in 69. A lot of people came out here from Eastern colleges at about that time. I came from Brooklyn. A lot of people came from Columbia. And we started doing things that we felt were the right things. Nobody gave me an incentive to do child care for feminist functions or to go to consciousness-raising groups or help out at Friends of Food or Pupils Food Store. You did things because they were the right things, and that's what Portland should be. I do not personally want any of my tax money going to developers. If they don't want to feel demonized, there is such a simple remedy for that. Don't do things that will lurk in the back of your head as having done the wrong things. It's really very basic. Don't get into some Jungian shadow sort of existence where you feel bad about things and then you feel demonized. Don't mess up backyard habitat. Don't take away people's views. Don't take away people's privacy. You don't want to feel demonized? It's really simple. I'd like to see this program mandatory, and again, I don't want to see any of my money going to incentivize towards developers. Use it towards training and implementation. I would also remind the council that the developers got a break on hookup fees, and I'd like to see that ended. It's my understanding that residential rates for water or sewer could have been 8% lower if they hadn't gotten this break.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. Greetings, member of the council and Mayor Hales. Thank you today for being here and hearing this proposal. My name is Preston Browning. I'm the owner of a business called Salvage Works in North Portland. I also sat on the deconstruction advisory group. Salvage Works has been in operation for 5 years, started with just myself, $10,000 and a forklift. We now have 9 employees. Our sales have increased 100% every year. And a little background. Basically, I am a lumberyard. Every stick of wood in my place is reclaimed, mostly from houses in the Portland area. I'm not a deconstruction contractor. We have a shop where we make furniture and fixtures. So I would like to touch on something that hasn't really been discussed here. I'm going to read you a list of businesses. The Sentinel Hotel, Olympic Provisions, the Ace Hotel, Clyde Common, the Hilton, downtown Portland, Ned Ludd, Rejuvenation, Killer Burger, Water Avenue Coffee, Bollywood Theater, Danner Boots, Whole Foods, New Season,